very strange here when it comes to Kisisa, because the truth is, I've never given a share on something like this, and most of this is Kabbalah oriented, and I took out all the Kabbalah. So without that, we really can't fully understand any of this. So I'm not so sure how much we're going to really be able to fully understand. But
you took out the phone.
I know. You're going to see. I couldn't take out everything. But in Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yichas, it says by Yomar Hareini Nas Kodecha. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, show me your honor. I want to see your glory. I want to see who you are, what you you can look like. So skipping Pasuk Yichas, where Hakadosh Baruch Hu answers him in a certain way, and it says Vayomer, Hashem said Lo Sucha Leros Es Panai. Pasuk Chaf, you will not be able to see my face. Ki Lo Yirani Adam Bachoy, because no man can see my face and live. It's impossible to be able to see my face and live. And then Pasuk Chaf Gimel Vasirosi Es Kapi, I will remove my hand, my palm. Vareisa Sachorai, you will see my back. Ufanai Lo Yirou, you will not be able to see my face. So what does this mean? These are unbelievable psukim. They just don't make any sense. So difficult to be able to understand. What kind of a question was he asking? And what kind of an answer was he getting over here? What are we talking about? What does this mean? So before we get into the whole thing, there are three other midrashim that we have to bring up over here to try to understand what's going into in this whole idea. So now he says, number one, not even malachim know the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. They say, and we say it in our Kedusha, Ayei Mekom Kvodo. Where is the place of their glory? They say, Baruch Kvod Hashem Min Komo. From wherever that place is that God is, that's where He's blessed. Even the malachim cannot see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If they can't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you can imagine for sure Moshe Rabbeinu, who is a human being, would not be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's impossible. They can't do it, so he wouldn't be able to do it as well. In fact, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer in Perek Mem Vav says the malachim were so upset that Moshe Rabbeinu even asked for this, they wanted to kill him. They said, how could you ask for this? We can't get this. You have the audacity to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and let's be honest, this is quite crazy. What are you asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I want to see your face, God. What does that mean? Why would you say that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The whole question seems to be silly. So the Gemara, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer tells us, Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, says that Moshe Rabbeinu was hidden in a rock in order to hide from the malachim, and Hashem put his hand over the cleft of the rock so that the malachim wouldn't see him, and as he took off the hand and walked away, Moshe Rabbeinu walked out of the cave to see Hashem, and he saw his back. That's what the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says. It's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable. What a remarkable midrash over here. Second thing, in the 11th parak, in Parak Chelek of Sanhedrin, Menashe uses these psukim as an excuse to kill Yeshaya, who was his grandfather, his Zaidi. This is what Menashe does. Menashe was the king of Bnei Yisrael, one of the last eight kings of Malchus Yehuda. Menashe, the son of Chizkiah, approached Yeshaya Navi and says, tell me, how can you claim to have seen Hashem? As Yeshaya says, Ra'isi as Kibodo, I was able to see God sitting on His throne of glory. How could you dare say that when Moshe Rabbeinu says that no man will ever see God's face and live? You say you got to see it, but you can't. It's impossible to see. How is that possible for you to see it? So Yeshaya didn't know how to answer him. I would assume the reason why is because the real answer is that he did not see an actual image. He saw a vision of God's greatness. And I would assume that's what he meant by when he says that I saw God. It's not that he literally saw God. He wasn't saying that. Nobody can. But he saw something that represented the greatness. He didn't think Menashe would understand it, so he forgot about it. And he said, forget it. I'm not going to answer. And he ran away. It's just so you know, by the way, the Gemara is absolutely unbelievable. Menashe was searching for Yeshaya. Yeshaya put himself in a tree. Not that he hid inside a tree. He turned himself into a tree. Menashe realized that Yeshaya, his Zaidi, turned himself into a tree. So he took an axe and started chopping down the tree. When he came to the part of the tree that represented Yeshaya's tefillin, where he would put his tefillin, that part of the forehead, he screamed and he died. That's what the Medrash says. So Yeshaya passed away. So Menashe killed his own Zaidi. Right? That's what ended up happening. But it was based on these psukim. Based on these psukim over here. And the final thing that we're going to mention is the Gemara in Chulin Daf Samach, that Hadrian, this is the famous Caesar that killed 8 of the 10 Asarugi Malchus. He was involved in Rechanan ibn Trazian's death. He was involved in Chutzpah Samatorgman's death. He was involved in Rabbi Akiva's famous death. This is all from Hadrian. Hadrian was not always bad. At first, Hadrian was actually a pretty good person. He was a big, a person who believed in Judaism, believed in a lot of things, and actually was friends with Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananiah, the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. He was friends with Rabbi Yoshua. He called in Rabbi Yoshua, and he asked Rabbi Yoshua, so tell me, I want to see Hashem. Can you show me Hashem? Rabbi Yoshua said, you won't be able to see him. He said, Ibra, no, absolutely, I want to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How am I going to be able to see God? How am I going to be able to do it? So Rabbi Yoshua said, I want you to meet me in the middle of the day, in the summer, in the middle of the day, we're going to walk outside. He takes him outside, and he says, look up at the sun in the middle of the sky. Right behind him is God. So Hadrian said, I can't look. I can't see past the sun. To which Hadrian was told by Rabbi Yeshua, if you can't see one of his servants, how do you expect to see God himself? There's no way that you can see God himself. Which means, the idea that Hadrian was being told by Rabbi Yeshua is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not a physical being that you'd be able to see. So how did most Rabbeinu expect to see something over here? Clearly there's something different. So we got a bunch of things over here. Yeshaya sees something, but he didn't really see it. We have, it's clear that Hadrian was being told by Rabbi Yeshua, you have nothing to be able to see. And Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says, the Malachim were arguing, there's no way for you to see. We can't even see it. How could you see it? And they were arguing with most Rabbeinu about this. So what was going on over here? So what we're going to do is we're going to give 10 answers. So before we give the answers, if you have your sheets, turn to page 4. On page 4, you're going to see this is what he asked for. I'm going to give you the answers before we go through every single thing. Number one, he wanted the clearest nevuah possible. That's one thing that he wanted. Number two, a vision of God that would stay with him forever. Number three, Hashem, that Hashem would lead them instead of a malach. Number four, that Hashem would talk to him directly. Number five, how did Davin and be answered? That's what he wanted. Number six, he wanted affirmation that they had a deal, that God would be with them forever. Number seven, how everything connects back to God and is related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number eight, to allow him to be the closest that he can be to God. Number nine, to see the reward that people get in the next world. Number ten, that Hashem should constantly be with us. Number 11, which is not really there, but why God does what he does. Why are you doing this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why do good people have bad things and bad people have good things, etc. These are the 11. Now let's try to go through it and let's try to understand. I'm going to go a little bit quicker now because there's a lot to do, a lot to see over here, so let's go. The Ramban says that he was asking to see something mamish, but not really a vision. He wanted something that's called a spaklaria mi'ira. Has anybody here heard of a spaklaria mi'ira? Have you heard of this? Okay, so I have to explain this really quickly. The way that a Navi is able to see something says the way the Gemara describes it. It's through an opaque mirror. I shouldn't say opaque. A mirror in which you are seeing yourself, and what you are seeing in this vision that you're seeing, it's like yourself doing something. You can watch yourself do something. That's the representation that you have that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was showing you. It's a mirrored image. You can't see past the mirror. There's no way to see past it. That's called aspaklaria, a vision, something that's there, she'ina me'ira, that does not go through. You can't see anything through it. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu was different. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only Navi to be able to have this type of vision. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to have the spaklaria mi'ira. What that means is that, you know, like at night when you have a window and it's dark outside, but it's light inside. So if you look at it, you can somewhat see a mirror of yourself. But if you look closely, you can see past the mirror and you can see that there are people behind it. There's something behind it. There's something going on outside the window. And the closer you get to the window, the clearer the vision is. When you get there, you can see what's behind and you don't see yourself anymore. You see what's going on behind there, but it's dark. It's not exactly as clear as you want it to be. That's called aspaklaria mi'ira. It is a vision of a window, but a window that's a little bit more opaque, as if it's nighttime, and you can see beyond it. You're really seeing yourself, but beyond it, there is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is right there. Moshe Rabbeinu saw something that's called aspaklaria mi'ira. The glory of Hashem in all of His manifestations. The idea of a kisya kavod, a throne of glory, which obviously doesn't make any sense to us, but a merkava, a chariot of God, he was able to see that, and the close that you could possibly get to. He's standing right up by the window. In theory, you could see a mirrored image of himself, but he's not. He's seeing beyond it, and he's seeing something beyond that image, and he's just not sure about what he's seeing. But nonetheless, it is a vision as opposed to words or something else that's happening. He's able to see something that's a lot clearer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, I know what you want. I know that you want to see me clearly as if it were face to face, literally, without any window in between us at all. Take away the window so that I'm standing on one side, you're standing on the other. No human being has the ability to do that while they're alive. You can't do that. The most you're going to see is through this type of window. That's what you're going to be able to see. But once I take away the window, you're going to die. And the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, then the pasuk says that he was able to speak to him, panim al panim. That's the idea of what he was supposed to be. And this week's parsha does say something like that, but that's how the Ramban understands it. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says the exact same thing. This is chutzpah. But he was able to see, and he quotes it, as the back and not the front. What that means is he is not able to see God from God's perspective. He can't see how the world works from how God looks down in the world. In the theory of relativity, where the closer you are to a certain object, the better it is, and the more clarity something is there. He's able to see it from his perspective, from the achorai, the back side, so to speak, of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But he can't see it straight forward. He can't see it straight in. That's going to be an impossibility for him. That's how the Ramban says. Now the problem is that according to Ramban, the way the Ramban is saying it, is why in the world would he ask for this? We know Moshe Rabbeinu hid his face from Hashem by the Sneh. The burning bush was going on, and Moshe Rabbeinu hid his face. He turned around so he wouldn't look at a Kodesh Baruch Hu. If he was being told that you can't see a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then why all of a sudden here is he facing a Kodesh Baruch Hu and asking to see Hashem? That makes no sense. That's number one. Number two, since when does Moshe Rabbeinu become so selfish that he's able to say, I want to see something? Well, why? Wait, you're up there in Shemayim for 40 days and 40 nights to daven for Klal Yisrael for them to survive. And you're wasting your time to ask for something for yourself? That you want something for yourself? He's like, is B'nai Yisrael going to be saved? Good. Can I see you? I really want to see you. I want to see what you look like. Can I just see an image, anything? But that's ridiculous. Why would you do that? That's not like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu gives up his life for Klal Yisrael. He says, Mechini, no. Erase me. Just get rid of me. I don't even need to be here. So what's he asking? I'm sorry?
You want to make sure he wasn't, like, delusional.
He knew this by now. The Makos have happened. Kriyas Yamsu have happened. If he thought he was delusional, that's the most awesome delusion I have ever heard before in my life. He has just destroyed the most powerful nation. They defeated Amalek. They got the Torah. This is, like, the greatest high that anybody would have been on. There's no way. That can't be. It's got to be more than that. So the Chidush Yarim says that he was asking for something totally different. Has anybody heard of Mises Nishika? The Misa that's called Nishika. The Gemara quotes it in Bava Basra Yud Zayim and Aleph. The kiss of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that allows a person to die. A person does not come to that death until the end of his life, and only the greatest tzaddikim are able to die through Misa's Nishika. Most people end up dying through a regular death, but Misa's Nishika is the greatest death. So to speak, it's as if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is taking you and lightly handing you, putting you down in Olam Haba, taking away your neshama and placing it somewhere else. The Gemara calls it, it's sort of like taking a little hair out of milk. That's what it's supposed to be like. That it's the lightest, seemingly most pleasant death that a person can have. Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Chidush Arim, was asking to be like all tzaddikim. That at the end of their lives, they see God. And if they see HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving them the neshika, giving them that kiss, so to speak, and letting them die, Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for that right now. He said, let me die. I want to see you by dying, having that Mises Nishika. And if I die, then I'll have an Ace Rutzon, because whenever a tzaddik dies, it brings a kapara for Klal Yisrael. So now, because of the Ego Azov, they need a kapara. They need to be atoned for. So let me die. I'll die by seeing you. That will make a kapara. And in that way, everybody will be saved. That's what he's asking for. He's not asking for it for himself. He wants to die in a way that shows him this is what's going to be for Klal Yisrael, to save Klal Yisrael in the best way possible. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them is that it's not yet time for you to die. But I accept your Mesiras Nefesh. The fact that you're willing to die, I accept that. And for that, I'll give you a method of tefillah that allows you to daven in such a way that it'll be like you're dead, that it will give a kapara for Klal Yisrael. And that was the Yud Gimel Midas Arachem. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachem Achanun. I promise I'll give you that instead. Ibn Ezra says the same thing. He talks about great secrets. I can never understand. Ibn Ezra had a different type of Kabbalah understanding than any other Rishonim. I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm sure there are people that are experts in the Ibn Ezra that can tell you what he's saying. I have absolutely no idea. It's something I don't know. He says, and that's the shot behind Tefillin. I have no idea. I absolutely no idea what he's saying. So if you want to look at Ibn Ezra, he has something. He's saying something like the Ramban, but I can't tell. I have absolutely no idea. Now, the Rambam talks about this. The Rambam, not the Ramban, but the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. In the very beginning of Amada, he mentions in Perek Aleph Halacha Yud, the Rambam mentions this and he says, God does not have any physical attributes. Even though the Pasuk says he has a hand and an eye and an ear, he doesn't have a hand, he doesn't have an eye, he doesn't have an ear, and anybody that says he has a hand and an eye and an ear is a fool, and the guy doesn't understand how God works. There are no physical attributes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, the Rambam says, how could Moshe Rabbeinu ask Harini Nas Kvodecha, to see a physical image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's impossible. There is no physical image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could he ask for it? How could that possibly be? He answers, Moshe, according to the Rambam, wanted to verify God's existence with an image that whenever he would conjure up that image in his mind, it would remind him of God. So for example, if I wanted to remember, for example, Natan HaKimi, sitting right over here, if I wanted to remember Natan HaKimi, so I would just close my eyes, I can picture Natan HaKimi's face in my head, right? So all of a sudden, I have Natan HaKimi inside my head, and that would be it. If I wanted to picture Chant, then all I'd have to do is to be able to say that, okay, I have a picture, an image in my head, and I think of Chant, and it's all automatically there. I don't have to try so hard to be able to figure it out. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted for God. He didn't want a physical image. He wanted something that every time he looked at it, he would be reminded of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, it doesn't have to be something physical that I'm holding in my pocket or something that's there. I don't need that. I need something that every time I think of it, I'm going to think of God. So he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is the best image that I could conjure up in my head that would allow me to understand that this is you? What would it be? Should I think of a Sefer Torah? Should I think of a menorah? Should I think of Har Sinai? What would be the best thing that I could conjure up in my head that would allow me to keep it inside me? A tzura, something that's like that. The same way that I could picture somebody else or something else inside my head. So Coach Baruch Hu answered him, a live person, a person who's alive, cannot do that clearly. Cannot. There's no way for him to be able to do that, and it won't work. But nonetheless, I will give you a clearer picture than any other human being has ever had. That's what I'll give you more than anybody else. The back of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then he stops right there. He says, that's it. That's all I can explain. Now, Rav Sternbuch, Moshe Sternbuch, in his Sefer Tamidas, says that the reason why he asked for this now, why now over any other time? Why didn't he ask this by the Sneh? Why didn't he ask this at the end of his life? Why now, when he's up in Shrine? It's obvious, says Rav Sternbuch. And really, the truth is the Yalkut Ruveni and the Miyam Loi say the exact same thing. I don't know if it's Rav Sternbuch's Kiddush and he didn't see those for him, but the Miyam Loi says this, the Yalkut Ruveni says this as well. He's just been in Shemayim for 40 days and 40 nights. When he was on the level of a Malach, he had an image of his head of what God looked like. I'm giving you an example. You know, sometimes you have a dream and in the dream you think of something and you conjured up an image inside your head, and when you wake up, you can't get back that image. You're trying to think of, wait, what did I think about? Wait, what was it? How did that image come into my head? And you can't picture it. It was sort of like this, but sort of not. You have like that, almost like that bit of like inspiration, that little like thing that pops in your head, like, but then you lose it. That's what he had when he was in Shemayim. When he was up in Shemayim, there was an image that he was able to see. There was something that represented God that he was able to do for 40 days and 40 nights. He's on the level of a Malach, and he was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost as if he was a human. There was some image that he had that he was able to do. But when he came back down to this world, he couldn't get it anymore. He was in a coarse physical structure, and in that sense he couldn't see anything, feel anything, or anything like that. So Sternbuch says now that he's back in Olam Hazeh, he davens for Klal Yisrael, and as soon as he finishes davening, he's like, Dad, I want it back. I want this back. I want that image that I had. I don't know what happened to it. I'd love to have it back. What do I do in order to get it back? That's what he's trying to ask. It's specifically now that he's asking for it, not before. But the Ravid says on the spot that this Rambam makes absolutely no sense at all. And if you think about it, it really doesn't make any sense. They did have an image. On Har Sinai, they saw the Kisei HaKavod, the glory of Hashem, coming down to the top of the mountain. At Kriyas Yamsuf, even the Shifcha at the Yam was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that no other Navi was able to see. They had images. They had something. There was something at Har Sinai, there was something at Kriyas Yamsuf that Moshe Rabbeinu, without a question, had seen. Says the Ravid, so all of a sudden he wants another one? What do you need another one for? You already have it. You don't need anything else. That's the first thing. Then, there's another passage that says, V'chanosiyas asher achon, v'richamtiyas asher achen. I give graciousness to those who deserve it. I give rachamim to those who deserve it. Says the Ravid, what in the world is that doing in this question? I want to see your glory. Well, I give graciousness and I give rachamim. What does that have to do with anything? I want an image. And you're telling me that you give graciousness and righteousness and rachamim? What does that have to do with anything? So later on he says, and you'll see my back and not my face. But what does this have anything to do? So the Ravid throws out the Rambam completely. There's a Kesef Mishnah, the Beis Yosef, who answers this question. But regardless, he throws it out, the Ravid throws it out completely. Instead, he gives another answer. He says it's all a continuation of the previous conversation. The conversation was, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't handle me anymore. If I'm around, I'm going to punish you immediately. There's going to be Midas HaDin for Klal Yisrael. And every time they do something wrong, immediately they're going to die. You can't handle me. So I'm not going to be around anymore. I'm going to stay in the background.
It'll be Hester Punnin, where I'm behind the curtain, and the curtain's back there. I'll be behind the curtain, and a Malach will take care of you directly. Michoel will be with you at all times. You won't have to deal with me. You'll deal with the Malach. The Malach has more rachamim. Because obviously, if you sin in the king's palace, inside his throne room, in front of the king, he has to lash out and kill you. But if you do it outside the palace and somebody sees you, there could be a little bit more rachamim. Said the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's better if a Malach is there. And Moshe Rabbeinu begged, cajoled, said to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, please, don't. I don't want the Malach. I want you and only you. Says the Ravid, he's begging for the Shekhinah to return to them and for him to see the Shekhinah returning. Not an image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want to know that God is with us and not a Malach. I want to know, I want to see it with my eyes, that you're here and not anything else. That's what it means. I want to see your face. Show me your kavod, not a Malach. I want to see your kavod with us the whole time. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry, you'll see my panai, you'll acharai, but you won't see panai. And that, says the Ravid, are great secrets that I don't think even the Rambam understood. That's what the Ravid says, and that's that. And that, by the way, the Migdal says the Rambam knew it. But regardless, that's the idea that the Ravid says, that he was saying, it's something where I wanted to see it return and that would happen. As a side note, by the way, that did end up happening. Michoel was the Malach that was supposed to be there. As we all know, Parsha Tetzave only has 101 psukim in it. So the famous word that everybody uses, that it's only 101 psukim, because the Nelam of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is spelled out. If you spell out the entire thing, it's Mem Mem, that's Mem. Shin is Shin Yud Nun, and He is He Aleph. So Mem Shin He is the actual Nigla, the revealed form of Moshe Rabbeinu. The hidden form is Mem Yud Nun Aleph. Mem Yud Nun Aleph is 101. So the Parsha Tetzave, where Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned whatsoever, is where Moshe Rabbeinu is Ne'alam. He's hidden. What is the simon of that Parsha? At the end of every Parsha, you're going to see that however many psukim the Parsha has, it then is the gematria of some word. The gematria of last week's parsha of 101 is the gematria of Michoel. Because why? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu's not there, who comes into play? Michoel. Which is why at the very end in Yoshua, when Yoshua goes out, and Moshe Rabbeinu's already gone, and Yoshua is ready to fight Yericho, he meets a Malach. The Malach is dressed up as if ready to go to war, and he says, "Alanu atol itzareinu. Are you with us or are you against us? Well, are you for us or you are with our enemies? Are you trying to fight us or not?" What did the Malach say? Ato Basi. Now I come. I couldn't come before because Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't let me. Now I come, and now I'm taking care of Klal Yisrael, because when Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, Hashem was with you. Now that Hashem is gone, I am with you from now on. Because everybody asks. Think about this question. Yeshua goes up and says, are you with us or are you against us? I come now. That is not the answer to the question. That just shows me that you're here. You did not answer anything, but now we know it is an answer. I come now. I didn't come before. I had to come now because Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't let me. Now I'm able to come, said Michal. That's the reason why. Obviously, Michal is the Gematria of 101. That's the way it goes over here. That's the idea. The Radvaz, where David ben Zimra was a gadol, and Afron, he lived in the 1500s in Egypt. He was the one who didn't allow the smicha to be given in Tzfas. If you know the famous story where they tried making the smicha of the 100 Rabbanim together in Tzfas, and it was the Beis Yosef and the Ramak, the Ramosha Cordovero, they all got together to make one smicha, and the Al-Sheikh, they all got involved, and they gave a real smicha. They brought it back with 100 rabbis, and they sent the people of Yerushalayim complained that they weren't involved. You should have asked us, and we didn't agree that you should do it in the first place. So they sent the Shaila to the Radvaz, and the Radvaz answered that he didn't like the smicha, and they threw out the smicha. The smicha supposedly still exists today, and it's still being given over to Great Gedolim. They say the Rav Avad Yosef had that smicha. But who says it? People that don't know. So I can't tell you if he actually had it or not. I have absolutely no idea. But they won't tell you. I'm sorry? Our smicha now, when I first got smicha, when I got smicha from, the first time that I got it was from Rezami Nechemi Goldberg. Then I got it from Rashiva and from Fis, and then I got another one. But it was, when I got my first one, I kind of figured like it was sort of like a process. Like you walk in, and like they put their hand on top of you, the right hand, and they say like some crazy words in like Kabbalah or something. And like you feel like lightning come down, and like everybody's cheering, and there's like birds flapping in the air, and like everybody's all happy. That's what I kind of figured. Instead, he gave me a piece of paper and said Shkoyach, and I was like Mazel Tov. I think he said Shkoyach Mazel Tov. All right, now what? Is that it? No birds? Like at least a ray of light come through the room, but nothing. Right? I walk outside. All right, everything's the same. So no,
that's not real smicha. It's not the same. But I got no hand on top of my head. No hand on top of my head. I think Marashiva kissed me on my forehead after I got smicha, but that's not a hand, so I have absolutely no idea. It doesn't work the same way that it did back then. But the Radvaz says that until now Moshe Rabbeinu had been speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through an intermediary, through someone in between. What he's asking now is, I don't want an intermediary anymore. I don't want it to be me talking to a Malach, talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want it to be directly me to you. I want you to speak to me and me to speak to you as much as possible. That's what I want to see. I don't need to see anything from you. I need there to be a connection between the two. I want to have direct conversations. And to that, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, the risk is not worth it. You're not ready yet. And if you do it, you may die. And if that happens, Klal Yisrael is going to suffer. So the risk of you having a direct conversation with me is not worth the possibility of you having a direct conversation and having it be better for you. In the end, Moshe Rabbeinu was Zocha. And he did have direct conversations, panim al panim, peh el peh. But until that point, he wasn't able to do it. Number five, Rashi. Rashi tells us that it really was asking, how can I connect to you at any time? What is the process that I could do this? See, it's one thing to be able to walk on top of a mountain, float up into a cloud, and go up to Shemayim for 40 days and 40 nights. How am I supposed to do that now? Give me 1 second, Shmuley. What am I supposed to do now? Like, if I want to do something and I don't have Har Sinai in front of me, how am I supposed to connect to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? And Hashem said, Seder HaTfila. You won't be able to see my face, meaning you won't be able to do a certain amount of tefillah that will allow me to automatically answer you, but you'll be able to get my Achorayim. Maybe you'll be able to daven in such a way where you'll grab me from behind, from my cloak, almost like my coattails, and please help me so that I turn around and help you. That's what you'll be able to do, and that's what Hashem, Kel, Rachum, Mechanun, etc. is going to be. The Baal HaTurim says this as well, but that's the concept of what it means, that you won't see Pana, but you're going to see Achorayim, you're going to be able to grab me from behind, you'll have a tefillah that's going to work. Shmuley, what were you going to say?
More than just the risk. The first two Hebrews, Hope and Israel died from Hashem.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really a risk. It was like a for sure.
Did Moshe Rabbeinu die? Yeah, that's the problem. We have no idea if Moshe Rabbeinu died from that. If he didn't, then it wouldn't have been as big of a risk. But if he did, then certainly that was a risk. Maybe he felt he was in a higher level at this point, but that's a great call in and of itself. All right, there's a Rashbam and a Paneach Raz over here that we're going to skip. There's also over here the Sforno that we're going to skip, but that's over here on the sheet itself. The Chassam Sofer is our eighth answer over here in Torah's Moshe. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was asking, I've got one mita that I can't get over. There's one mita that I have an issue with. It's anger. He has an anger issue. It's not an anger problem, because Moshe Rabbeinu never had an anger problem. The most that he does is he says to Klal Yisrael, you guys are a bunch of rebellious people. If that's an issue with anger, then that I would love to have that as a person who gets angry. that's not anger. He just said, like, oh, you're so rebellious. And that was it. And that was his anger. But there is something that Moshe Rabbeinu has in which he was felt there was something a little bit wrong when it came to Kass. He said he felt, this is Moshe Rabbeinu, that this is the only issue that's keeping me from getting to the highest level that's called Shar Nun. The 50th level of understanding that's going to get me to the highest level where I'm connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he said, allow me to lose my anger. I don't need it. There is no need for anger by me. So please take away my anger. As a side note, he was wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu obviously didn't notice at the time. He needed his anger for the incident of Korach. Without anger, Korach may have continued to survive and allow to really be metame the minds of Klal Yisrael and destroy them by making them think, no, Moshe's not right, and Aaron's not right. Korach needed to die. He needed to be gone in order for Klal Yisrael to survive. Without anger, that never would have happened. He needs the anger to be able to survive. Says the Chassam Sofer, Hashem told him, it's impossible anyway. I can't take away a mita from you because putting you on that level will allow you to be so great, you'll no longer be able to connect to the people. You won't be in this world anymore. You'll essentially be dead. That's what it means, pana. You cannot see my face to get rid of certain things. It's automatically going to make you too high and you won't be able to stay in this world. Is that
the anger is what you need in order for Korach, but the anger also would cause his death.
In the end of the day, yeah, the only mita that causes death. In a way, yeah, but there's two issues with that. Number one, that doesn't mean that wasn't his perfection. That actually shows you that that was his perfection. He had one chance to be able to improve on it. He didn't do it. For whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that there for him to die. That's the one thing. The second thing you have to remember is that it's an impossible idea of what would be if you know, if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have gotten angry, if he wouldn't have whatever it is. I don't know what to say in situations like that. Maybe there was something that could have happened. If he wouldn't have gotten angry, there would have been worse. Let's call it that way. Died earlier, let's call it. Whatever it would be. But we don't know and stuff like that. The Kliyakar says another thing. So Kliyakar says, it's obvious that we get rewarded in this world. What does it mean we get rewarded in this world? Well, everybody here, I thank God, I just read a story. It's an unbelievable story of a person who saw a house that was dilapidated and went in to go see, you know, like, you know, one of those, like, he wanted to play around in the house. It was like a 12, 13-year-old kid. He walked into the house, and he smelled the worst odor he could possibly think of. So he was with somebody else, and they kept daring each other, I dare you to go further, let's go see what it is. They figured it was a dead rat, right? As they were going further, right, all of a sudden they saw that there was a kid. There was a kid sitting in this squalor hallway in the middle of this house. They couldn't understand it. So they went up to him and they started talking to him, but the kid had no ability to talk back. He was just, there was something wrong. I didn't know if he was mute, there was something wrong. So the kid, all of a sudden they heard a voice. They heard a voice. So they went into a room and they saw that there was a lady in a bed, filthy, absolutely filthy, covered with blankets. Her hair looks like she hasn't showered in years. And they're disgusted. They couldn't believe it. And then they looked around. They saw it. They didn't even notice. There was an older man just sitting in the corner. The woman had a mild form of mental retardation. The child was brought up in such a way that he'd never been out of the house. He had no idea how to get out of the house. And the grandfather was so old, he was sick, he didn't move. He was somehow still alive. These kids saved these people. They were able to take them out, you know, find social workers to be able to take care of them and bring them into special homes to be able to take care of them and stuff like that. So let's be honest. None of us have lives that are anything like that. None of us. None of us deal with leprosy. None of us deal with the issues that happen to all these people in India and China. Even though we think to ourselves, well, it could be better. Of course it could be better. But overall, we are living unbelievably rich and fulfilling lives. Lives that our great-grandparents would die for, would kill for. Any of us, just for running water. They would do anything for. Says the Kliyakar, he was saying, I understand there's reward in this world. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. I get it. I understand that people get rewarded somehow in this world. So what's the next world like? I want to see the reward. It'll help me understand it. It'll help me be able to tell people. I want to see your kavod, the honor that you give to people in Olam Haba. Let me see it. I want to see it with my very own eyes so that I can see it. Bring me up like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi in the Gemara and Ksuvah Daf Ayin Zayin. Bring me up. Let me see Olam Haba. I want to see Gan Eden. I want to see what it's like. And then I'll come right back down. Said Moshe Rabbeinu, there's no way you can see that. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry, to Moshe Rabbeinu, there's no way you can see it. You can see my back. You can see what happens in this world, but you can't see my front. Seeing what happens in the next world, you won't want to leave. And you won't. You'll stay there forever and you won't come out. You're not going to get out afterwards. There's nothing you can do about that. I can't allow your body to leave your soul at this moment, so I'm not going to allow this to happen. I'm not going to give you that request. Now we can understand the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Brachos Daf Ches that Daf Zayin, sorry, that when Moshe Rabbeinu saw the back of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, does anybody remember what he saw on the back of his head? The back of the tefillin shel rosh. It's funny, by the way, the Targum Yonasim Nezil says the tefillin shel yad, an interesting call in of itself. But the tefillin shel rosh is what the Gemara says, and it seems clear from all the Rishonim, aside from the Targum Yonasim, that it's the tefillin shel rosh. So what does that mean, the back of the tefillin shel rosh? In the back of the tefillin shel rosh is a dalet. We all know that on the tefillin shel rosh itself is a shin, on the actual bias itself. And then in the tefillin shel yad is a yud, a tiny little yud in the knot that's on the side. I don't know about like Ashkenazi tefillin, we'll say it. So you got a shin, a dalet, and a yud. Says the Kliyakar, the shin and the yud stand for shai. There are 310 olamos, gematria of shai, that are given to tzaddikim la'asid lavo, hanchil la'oavai yesh, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. You give to my loved ones yesh, 310 olamos. You can't see the front of the tefillin shel rosh. You can't see the shel yad, says the Kliyakar. But what can you see? The dalid. The dalid stands for dalid kanfos ha'aretz, the four corners of this earth of Olam Hazeh. You can't see the reward that you get in the next world, the Shai Olamos, the Shin and the Yud. But you can see the Dalid, you can see what's going on here, that you'll be able to see. That's the
pshat he says regarding seeing the tefillin. He says that's also why in Shema, in the Sefer Torah, Shema Yisrael, Shema Elokeinu Hashem Echad, the ayin is big and the dalet is big. Says the Kliyakar, he assumes the reason why is because the ayin, the eye, can only see the dalet, this world, and cannot see the next world. That's the reason why you're only able to see one and not the other. When Rabbi Yehuda Nasi talks about what he was like when he was younger, it's a Gemara in Erevin Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. He says, I saw Rav Meir, I was in Rav Meir's shir, but I was never able to see his front. I was only able to see his back. Had I been able to see his front, I'd be greater than I am today. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says. It's the only Gemara where you see such a concept of front and back when it comes to a Talmud and a Rebbe. Says the Kliyakar, it could be what he means is that he could only understand the secondary Kiddushin of Rav Meir. He could never understand the primary sources of what Rav Meir wanted. That's the entire point of the Gemara, by the way. The entire point of that Gemara was to say we never passed like Rav Meir. Why don't we passing like Rav Meir? Because Rav Meir was such a genius, you would ask him a kasha. You say, let's just say, should I say Tachnun on Purim Katan? And Rav Meir would say, well, you shouldn't because it's considered like a chag. And you should, right? Because Tachnun still has a special power that even should work on a day like Purim Katan. So what do I do? Rav Meir said both shitos. And you could argue both ways perfectly. And you could ask him what to say. Does this make sense? Yes, and I'll tell you why. Does that make sense? Yes, and I'll tell you why. Rav Meir had such a mind, you had no idea what Rav Meir meant. Rav Meir said a shita, you have no idea if that's what he held the halacha, or that's just what he was telling his talmidim to understand both sides of the equation. So nobody had any idea. That's what Rav Yehuda Nasi was saying. I couldn't see his front. I had no idea what he actually meant. I could see his back. I could see around the ideas, but I couldn't tell exactly what he was getting at. And that's the pshat. In this world, you can't tell exactly what God is getting at. You have no idea. But you can't, what you can see is the achorayim, meaning you can see certain instances that somehow help us understand, I get that there's a plan here. And that's that. That's the idea from the Kliyakar itself. The Chasam Sofer brilliantly says, the Tefillin Shorosh is put Beinei Necha, between your eyes, says the Chasam Sofer. The reason why it's there is to consider that we are always being taken out of Egypt as if you can see it with your eyes. The Tefillin Shorosh is right there for that reason. The knot in the back of the head is to constantly remember, referring to the brain, all of God's goodness, all the great things that God has done for us. And there's constant ashkacha, which is good if we're good, and bad if we do something that's not so good. Thus Hashem told them, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I want to see your front. I want to see your face. I want to see you with us constantly, constant ashkacha, with us at all times, watching over us. Said Hashem, I know you don't want a malach. I'm not going to give you a malach, but I can't let you see my face. It's going to be too hard for you. I'll let you see my back. I'm going to turn my back on you so that I don't have to watch what you're doing. But if you need me, you can just tap me in the shoulder and I'll be there for you. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us. It's not going to be a direct, I'm watching you do it, because if you sin, then I'm going to have to strike out at you. I'm going to have to lash out. I'm not going to let you have a malach that's different. I'm going to turn my back to you and allow you to do whatever. That's the idea behind the tefillin being around, says the Chasam Sofer. And then the Mayim HaShel Torah. Our 11th answer and our final idea that we're really going to go through. Menashe Torah says, obviously there are things in this world that we can't understand. You won't be able to see the face of a Kadosh Baruch Hu before anything happens. You have no idea why. The word lifnei, beforehand, you cannot understand why God does certain things. The achorayim, the afterward, after it happens, then you can turn and you can see like, oh, now I get it. Now it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Obviously, the Purim story follows that. You read the Purim story. If you don't concentrate at all, you look at it and you're like, why in the world is Achashverosh's party mentioned? I mean, it was a cool party. Lots of gold, lots of beds. I get it, right? But why in the world do we have to know about the party? And Vashti's death, who cares? Just say, Achashverosh was looking for a queen, found Esther. Thank God she was in the palace. She saved us from Haman. Yay! That's it. Maybe mention one Haman so you can get a little like that inside there, right? But that's it. You don't need anything else. You definitely don't need the party. The party makes no sense. The party makes no sense. Have you ever tried making an 80-day party? You know why you don't? Because there was one guy who tried to do it. And he went poor after 37 days. It's brought down the Miam Loes. You get 180 days. That's crazy. That's the craziest party ever. Why are we mentioning that? So says the Chasam Sofer, because only once you see the very, very end, do you see how everything tied together in the beginning.
the Jews going to the party allowed Haman, who was Memuchan, to start going up in the kingdom. That also allowed the Jews to be on a lower level. They're now connected to Ahasuerus, almost like his avodin. Vashti dying was an allowance for not only Esther to come inside, but for Haman to see that he could take over. If he was powerful enough to get the queen killed, he might be powerful enough to get the Jews killed. It allowed everything. Once you see the end story, you're able to go back to the beginning and explain everything from the beginning. So that's the idea of the Acharayim versus the Hanan. Oh, there's so many stories over here. I mean, obviously, you all know it, and I'm not going to be able to do everything over here. It's just so cool. The Rebbe Victor Miller says, have you ever seen magnetism? You ever seen electricity? You see the result of electricity. Have you ever actually seen electricity? No. But you know what it is. You know that it works. I mean, you hope, right? You have no idea. You can't see magnets. When you take two magnets and they stick together, do you see anything happening? Do you see two hands going like, I got you? It doesn't happen, right? Nobody ever sees that. Says Rabbi Victor Miller, it's obvious that there are forces in this world that we cannot see. We know the manifestations of those forces, but you cannot see anything else. Can you see sound waves? No. But you certainly can hear them. Similarly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. But the only way for us to see Him is by understanding His ways, by knowing what He does. And that's the Acharayim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't see me doing what I need to do, says God, but you'll see the results of my actions. That's what you're able to do, and that's the idea behind it. So much. All right, does anybody know the Holocaust story of the guy who had hair in his palm? Anybody know that story? Famous story? Right, because it's skin graft and when it's out. Okay, it's an unbelievable story. I don't have time to tell it. It's an unbelievable story. It's the same idea of you think something's bad and ended up being good in the end. Does anybody know the story of the Chassam Sofer when he taught Hebrew to that soldier? Taught Hebrew to the soldier, and in the end, that soldier was judging him for doing something. Anybody remember that? No. Okay, it's a crazy story also. I have no time. But regardless, if you want to check out, the Lino Shabbat says both of those stories, but they're both unbelievable. So let's go into one last thing over here. Oh, man, the part of Joseph. All right, I'm going to ask you to read this part of Joseph because we don't have time. Chofetz Chaim says part of the issue... All right, I guess it's good. I can go through this really quickly. We can finish this in 2 minutes. Number one, Chofetz Chaim says, can you imagine a guy coming to shul for the very first time? A guy comes into Beis Chaim for the first time. Some of you would be. And you walk inside and you sit there and shul on Shabbos. You see that the Gabbai is like giving psicha to that guy. And Rishon Kohen is that guy. And Levi is that guy. And the first Yishol is over. And the Shlishi is there. Revi is there. So the guy goes up to the Gabbai afterwards. He's like, this doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you just give 7 aliyahs to 7 guys who are sitting in a row? You give that the first week. And then the next week you do the next row. And then the next week you do the next row. Why wouldn't you do that? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Scott that looks at him is like, you fool. I mean, if you came here a couple extra weeks, which you should anyway if you're coming here, but if you came here for the other weeks, you'd understand. That guy needed an aliyah because he had a yortzeit. That guy needed an aliyah because he made a siyum. This guy needed that. So I had to take from different places, but that means they couldn't be used the next week. So I had to go for this guy that week. And there's a whole plan here. But if you only come 1 week, you're not going to understand it. So that's a couple of times. You're sitting in this world. You've been here for how many years? 20, 25, 30 years, right? At the most. Right? 30? So you've been here for like, at the most, you've been here for just about that and that's about it, right? And you're sitting here and you're trying to understand how God runs the world. You've been here for a minute. This is your first time in shul. And you're saying like, well, I don't understand how that happens. Because you're 30. Because the world has a whole history behind it. Because you don't understand how the world works. So you expect me to explain that to you? Well, why should I explain that to you? Come a few more times, live for another couple thousand years, and then you'll understand it. Then you'll see what's going on. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's the idea that you can't go through the idea of Anna. You're a guest coming to shul for the very first time complaining about the Gabbai. And that Gabbai, let me tell you, not a guy you want to complain about. And the Pardes Yosef says the obvious idea as well, but it's such an awesome Pardes Yosef. You have to see it about a poor person and what you should treat, how you treat a poor person. First time you see him and then afterward, it's an awesome idea. Regardless, we went through the 11 ideas of what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see. We went through ideas. The Rambam was probably the clearest, one of the craziest pshatim. But all those ideas. At the very end, we went through the idea of the tefillin with the Kli Yakar. We also understood the idea of Ra'isa, Panayim, and Achorayim being knowing what happens only afterward, not knowing what happens beforehand. There are stories that I wasn't able to say. And then afterward, the Chofetz Chaim, that muscle that we're able to give of walking with shul, that it's unfair to be able to have that expectation to understand what it is afterward. Shkayach, everybody. Have a good